and introductions. I have not mentioned it, but we do have around the Focal Point bulletin board in the foyer, a speaker wall where you can read about our speakers. I hope that they all know that we have the utmost confidence and respect for them, which is why we ask them to be here and to participate. And so we don't want to steal their time by talking about them and their work, although we're proud of what they've done. I will have a few things to say at the end of this session, getting ready for lunch. I know you're listening to me in here, but I don't think those in the foyer are. Got quiet, didn't it? They can hear me out there. Each year, we have tried to somewhat vary our speakers. Somewhat difficult to wean people off the list because of how much they are embraced by this congregation, how much this congregation grows to love them, the attendees grow to love them. But I have for a number of years wanted the opportunity to ask our next speaker to be with us, and I'm thankful that I had that opportunity this year. I believe that this part of the workshop is each year the highlight. It draws us all in together to the same room, and whether we are preachers or elders or church members, Bible class teachers or deacons, we all have families, relationships, and need instruction and help and guidance. And I've heard Brother Higginbotham a number of occasions in the past and in a number of different venues and pertaining to a number of different things, but I have been encouraged and challenged every time I have heard him even reference the home. And so I'm thankful for that. And his name came to the top of the list this year to try to get to come and to be here. I'm thankful to God it worked out. I'm thankful to him for being here with us. These lessons been left to him. They will perhaps build on one another, perhaps not, but they will be in reference to our families. And so I would ask not only for this hour, but for this hour for the next 3 days, that you give attention to Brother Higginbotham as he speaks to us.
Am I on? Testing. Is it on? Okay. There we go. Well, it's good to be here. I appreciate very much the invitation to be with you and send my greetings from East Tennessee, the Carnes congregation there, as well as the East Tennessee School of Preaching and Missions that is conducted there at the congregation where I preach. I know some of you have already heard this, some of you haven't, because I haven't met all of you. And whenever I go anywhere for the very first time, I always answer a couple questions up front just to get it out of the way so you don't have to think about it. So here are your answers. I'm 6'6", and yes, I played basketball. Can we be done with that? Because I know that's what goes through your mind, and that's what you're thinking. Somebody just a minute ago said, wow, you're tall. And so I hear, and people say, they'll come up to you and say, how's the weather up there? And they'll slap their legs like that's the funniest thing. You've never heard that before in your life. And so years ago, I said, I'm going to work on a comeback to that. And I did. And I was at a lectureship in West Virginia one time and got done speaking. A guy runs up in the pulpit, gets right up at my chest and looks up at me and says, how tall are you anyway? Just ugly sounding. And I said, I'm 6'6". And he said, I bet you played basketball. And I said, yeah, I did. And with that, he just turned and started to walk away. And I said, wait a second. I said, how tall are you? He said, I'm 5'4". And I said, I bet you played miniature golf, didn't you? Well, now, he didn't do what you just did. He got red-faced. So I tell you that just to let you know I'm ready for you. I am armed. I'll tell you this one and then I'll get going here. I did have a lady go out the door one day and she said, young man, how tall are you? And I said, ma'am, I am 5'18". She shook her head and said, I would have sworn you were over 6 feet. But, oh well, I have a lot of fun with my height. I'll tell you what we're going to do. Today we're going to talk about some things dealing with marriage, relationship in the home. Tomorrow we're going to talk about our children and the relationship and parenting and some practical, I hope it's really practical stuff. And then on Wednesday, we're going to talk about our homes as it relates to the church, in particular, the work of preaching and how we ought to conduct ourselves and our homes and so forth as it relates to the church. But that's the outline for the next couple days. I hope you can be here every session because I do believe it's a needed topic and that we have some very practical stuff to share with you. I, first of all, believe that there is a widespread misunderstanding about what spiritual is, what it means to be spiritual. I think there's a whole lot of folks that think that spiritual means emotional. If I feel a certain way, that's a spirit. You know, you go out by a campfire and you hold somebody's hand and you sing Kumbaya, and man, that's one of the most spiritual experiences I've ever had. It may be because you're holding the hand of a girl next to you. It may have nothing to do with, you know, anything being said. And I wonder sometimes when people say that, what if false teaching had been taught and that person wasn't mature enough to identify it? And what if, you know, somebody played a guitar along with it and so forth? The feelings might have been the same, but doesn't make it a spiritual event if those things are violated. So I want you to understand that what is spiritual because God said it is. That's what makes a thing spiritual. And it doesn't have anything to do with how you feel about it or what it makes you, if it gives you goosebumps or chills or whatever. That has nothing to do with, I hear people say, church, man, I hate to go to church. It's so boring. It's so mundane. I don't get this, you know, if I go over here, I get this big experience and I feel good and therefore there's more spiritual than here. Doesn't follow. Listen, I just did the funeral for an 88-year-old lady this past week, and she had been a shut-in for some time, and her daughter ministered to her for a number of years. She did mundane tasks that never see the light of day. Behind closed doors where no one sees, it doesn't get put in the bulletin, there's no pats on the back. She did all the things that had to be done to take care of her mother in her illness. Folks, that's spiritual. It wasn't an emotional high. It wasn't a mountaintop experience, but it was spiritual because she was fulfilling what God wanted her to do as a daughter in caring for and honoring her mother. And when it comes to the home, I think that one of the problems with the home today is that we're looking for that mountaintop experience, and anything that's mundane or run-of-the-mill, we kind of just discredit. But I'm here to tell you that that run-of-the-mill kind of stuff that you do in relationship to the home and to your spouse, those things are spiritual. The Bible, if the instruction comes from God, it's spiritual. And so when I treat my wife and do the things that the Bible tells me to do, and when my wife does the things that the Bible tells her to do, and I treat my children and show them the kind of love that I'm supposed to, even though those things may be summed up in what we might think run-of-the-mill kind of things, that's spiritual and to be honored and not dismissed. I think part of the problem that we face today is that our image, our view of what home, what marriage, what our relationship should be has been tainted and changed, perverted. And people are looking for happiness and fulfillment in the home and they can't seem to find it because they're looking at all the wrong places and they've bought a bill of goods that don't deliver and they're frustrated. Well, everything that God has given us for good, haven't we somehow seemed to mess up? You go back to Genesis, God gave us government, right? Well, Romans chapter 13. And that government is intended for our good and for our protection. But look at what has been done in the name of government. How many millions of people have lost their lives because of government? The Bible has told us, or the Bible tells us, that God gave us a church. Look at what has been done in the name of church, in the name of religion. There's a lot of crime there as well. People abused, manipulated, stolen from and all the things that have happened in the name of religion. Yeah, we've perverted that. And the Bible tells us that God gave us the home, Genesis 2. And look at what has happened with regard to the home. God gave us the home to fulfill our needs, to satisfy us, to make life a joy. It is not good for man to be alone, and thus he created the woman to be his help, who was worthy of him and worthy for him, suitable to him. And that relationship that was intended to bring good and, oh man, it's become a drudgery. You know, some places say 50% of marriages end in divorce. And I don't know, you can debate about that statistic or not, but I tell you what, if you just take something close to that number that end in divorce, add to that number this number. How many homes or how many marriages are broken in the heart and not in the courtroom in our society today? Oh, they're still together, but it's a drudgery. There's no joy in it. There's no fulfillment in it. That's not what God intends for the home. He has so much better in mind for us. And I want to share with you, and you know, this theme is, you know, the preacher and his family. What applies to the preacher applies to all of us, and what applies to all of us applies to the preacher as well. So these are pieces of advice. We'll get a little more specific on Wednesday, but these are things that we need to know to help us in having the kind of home that we should have. First of all, I think it's important to recognize that the home has been abused, and your home may not be where it needs to be. It may be on a little shaky ground because of where we've put it, where we've allowed others to put it. There are sinister forces out there that are working to destroy the home, and sometimes we, just because of neglect, have contributed to a less than ideal home. But I'll tell you, one of those sinister forces, I don't go to very many movies, because I end up, they manipulate me. Now, I go to some movies, but not very many, because I end up rooting for the bad guy. You know, do you ever do that? You ever watch something and pretty before you've gotten pulled in and you're rooting on the wrong side? You know, if they can manipulate us like that, well, let me give you an example, and I'm going to walk on somebody's toes here. And you're going to get, you know, just take it, is it true or not? You know, don't get defensive. I'm going to tell you something. Remember a few years ago, the movie Titanic? I'm not going to ask you if you watched it. Don't admit to it, okay? But here's where I'm going with this. Well, just the other day was 100 years since the Titanic sank. I actually preached a sermon on that and took the lives of three individuals that were on that ship. One got off early, one barely got off, and one didn't get off at all. And that's the outline that I used for that morning, and I talked about how we need to get out of sin. Now, if there's an outline at the bicentennial, you can all use that, you know. Anyway, I like history. And the whole thing about the Titanic sinking, that really interests me and intrigues me. I like to watch that. And so the movie would be okay, I would think, and I would think that that would be something. But you know what? Hollywood really manipulated us, because it wasn't really about the sinking of a ship. The movie was about an adulterous relationship between a woman and a man. That's what the movie was about. It manipulated us and had us pulling for the wrong people in that. I don't want to be manipulated like that. I don't want to take pleasure in things that cost other people their soul. Romans chapter 1. And so there are some forces that work against the home, but I want to tell you, here are some things that we need to do, and here are things we need to have in our home. Our homes need to have commitment. What, you know, the Bible tells us to love, and love, did you ever do this when I started dating, I wanted to call this girl up, and I wanted to ask her out to a church banquet, and so I picked up my old rotary telephone, you know, with the finger thing, and I got all the numbers dialed, and then before it could, you know, register, you know, I'd hang back up and go, oh, that was close. You know, I had to work on it again, and I had to build my way up to it. it was really scary. I finally got her asked out. But you know, there's love is more than just that. Oh man, it's scaring me half to death. I'm sweaty palms and butterflies. And love is commitment. How else can we love our neighbors and our enemies? We have to have commitment to them. The goodwill that should exist. I'm not going to get all sentimental about enemies, but can I commit myself to their well-being and to their best interests? Sure I can. And that can be commanded. What a lot of people don't realize when they enter marriage is they enter it saying, oh, I'm in love, and they expect this fluttery thing to go on forever. And that doesn't always happen. And so they end up saying, I don't think I'm in love anymore. You know how many times I've had people come in my office and sit down and say, I just don't love them anymore. I just don't love her anymore. Well, the problem with those kind of statements is it doesn't really understand what love is. Love is commitment. I went to high school with a girl. We went to college, and she didn't go to college. I went on to college. She got married to a lifelong guy we grew up with, and when I came home for Thanksgiving break, she had already divorced him. I saw her out on the street in front of my house, and I stopped by. I said, hey, how you doing? How's so-and-so? And she said, well, didn't you hear we divorced. I was so taken back. You divorced? You're kidding me. And she said, no, I just decided it wasn't what I thought it would be. And so there's how quickly things just can be. We have to be committed in our homes. Love is the glue that holds us together when we don't like each other, when we're not getting along very well. Did you have that first year of marriage difficulty? My wife's not here, so I can talk just as freely as I want to. When we first got married, man, I married a woman. She was from Missouri, and I hauled her off sight unseen to a church in West Virginia. And she's 8 hours away from her parents, and boy, it was difficult. We didn't do things the same. When we got married, I didn't have to do dishes when I was single, and neither did she. And we went through every dish in our house until they were all stacked in the sink. And we're looking at each other like, well, when are you going to do this? And we had to come to some agreement about some things. Love holds you together. Commitment holds you together during those times where you have to work through some of those difficult moments. You need to commit to each other. I remember hearing a preacher tell about the first year he was married. It was Valentine's Day, and he came home. Well, he left for work, and as soon as he left, his wife made this big cardboard card and wrote this big love letter. It was in the shape of a heart, and she fixed his favorite meal, and all this stuff took place. And then he goes to work. At the end of work, he stops by his parents' house instead of going home. They were having supper, so he sits down and eats supper with his parents. He decides to have dessert with them. He hangs around till about 7:30, comes home, never calls his wife, comes home, and he said, I knew something was wrong as soon as I hit the door because I could smell the candles. And I looked up, and they had burned all the way down to their stand. And I saw that big card, and I thought, oh, it's Valentine's Day, and I forgot. It's too late to run to Walmart. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. And so he comes on in, he walks to the bedroom, and his wife's laying there. Her covers are pulled up all the way up to her face, just laying there. And he said, you know, what am I going to say? Am I just going to lean down and say, honey, I love you. Is it going to be okay? You know, that's all you have to do? It's not. Not that I know from experience, but it's not. It's going to take more than that. Because she doesn't like him at that moment. But he said, you know, in spite of that, we never thought about divorce. Are you kidding me? Because commitment is there. There are going to be difficult things happen in your marriages. whether it's between just the two of you or challenges with your children or with outsiders to your marriage. You have to be committed or else you'll walk away. Here's a second thing that we need in our homes, and that is that we need to honor one another. What I mean by that is, well, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7 tells us, well, in particular, he's talking to men, how that they're to honor their wives and the women are to respect and reverence their husband. And men are to dwell with their wives according to knowledge and according to understanding. Men and women are not the same. That's pretty axiomatic, I guess, but the way we think is different. And the Bible tells us that we're to honor each other. Listen, I know more stuff on my wife than anybody else in the world. And she knows more on me than anybody else in the world. So I'm walking around with this body of material that I could dump out to my friends when we all get together and make her look silly. And we can have a big laugh at her expense. But I'm not going to do that because I'm going to honor her. And when she's together with a bunch of women and they're sitting around having lunch, she has this body of information that she could throw out there on the table and make me look ridiculous. But she won't do it. You know, when we first got married, we went to a home invited for dinner, and we sat there and we watched a verbal punching, a boxing match the whole game. It was like, oh man, it was painful to be there and watch. And when we left, we got in the car and drove home, and we were both silent. Nobody said anything for a couple blocks, and I finally said, let us promise now that we never do this to each other. And we've tried to live by that all of our lives. It's become a kind of a fun challenge, a fun game for us, because sometimes people don't have that agreement, and so I'm a jokester. I like to cut up and laugh, and so people will constantly come up to my wife and say, hey, listen, I don't know how you can live with that man. And she says, it's an honor for me. Well, that's not what they expected her to say. You're supposed to play along, you know, like, yeah, I know. And she takes them back. I mean, she always says something that builds me up instead of going along with however they're wanting to rag on me. And it just like, they don't know what to do with that. And that's what the Bible's talking. And don't you know that makes me feel good? And it snowballs. It just works for the good of the relationship. That's what the Bible wants us to do. God wants us to honor one another. Ephesians 5 and verse 33 says that we are to cherish our wives. Men, do you cherish them? I went to a church picnic one time, and this guy, his wife was up. The whole church is gathered together on the church lawn, and this wife was up there. She's getting a piece of cake. And this man yelled at his wife and said, hey, don't eat that. You don't need that piece of cake, you big heifer. Can you imagine? Oh, well, people kind of laughed sort of nervously, but I'll tell you one person that didn't, his wife. There's no place for that. That kind of thing destroys relationships. And you can sit back and say, oh, I was just teasing. I was just having fun. I didn't mean anything by that. I was just playing. And, well, listen, you can call it what you want, but it's painful. And those words hurt and do damage. I've counseled people that are in there trying to make their marriages work, and some of the most hateful things have been said to each other that I don't even know how you go on. The path of forgiveness is sometimes very, very difficult because of the hateful things that were said. We need to honor one another in our relationships. And I'll tell you, part of honoring each other is understanding that we're different. I got a haircut the other day, and they buzzed me. I still haven't found a good barber yet. I've been there 2 years, and this girl, she took all my hair off. Well, I get to church Sunday, and oh man, the guys are like, "Well, did you have an accident with a weed eater? You know, something like that." It's okay. I don't care. You know, I'm not. Do you believe what John said to me? He said something about my hair. You know, I don't go home and say that. But now, if you go to my wife after she gets a haircut and say, "Hey, what happened? You have an accident with a lawnmower?" You've devastated her. You know, you don't talk. And women will talk. "Oh, I love your haircut. It makes your face look slimmer, and it makes it, you know," and they go into all the things that that haircut. We're different. And guys, 1 Peter 3:7 says that we're to dwell with our wives in knowledge, with understanding of those differences. My wife told me a couple years ago what her very favorite gift was that I ever gave her in my life. You know what it was? A letter. I wrote her a letter for Christmas one time. She read it and she boo-hooed and cried, and boy, she's got it saved. A letter's the best thing I ever gave her. Wish I would have known that before I bought some of the other things I bought, but that was it. Man, that's not going to be my favorite. I want something that plugs in or something, you know, but for her, it was a letter. And right before we moved to Knoxville, we had been 20-some years in Kentucky, and we decided to move and work with this church and the school there. And we got down, and I reached up and back of the closet, and there was this box, and opened it up, and there were love letters that we had written to each other while we were in college. And I pulled one of them out, and I was like, "Oh man, did I say this stuff?" And I was like reading it, and you know what she did? She stopped me, and she finished what I said in that letter 25 years earlier. Are you kidding me? What in the world? I mean, how could she possibly remember that? But she did. My point is, there are certain things that your wife will appreciate, maybe, that you don't share the same degree of appreciation for. You need to tune into your wife. That's a way to honor her. And the Bible commands us to do that. Another thing that we need to do is to have, well, to keep courtship alive in our relationships. Guys, did you ever open the door for your wife on your car? Go around, you open the door, let her get in, and close it for her? Ladies, did you ever scoot over a little closer to him and let him know that you liked him? Guys, did you ever bring flowers home to your wife for just no reason? If you did those things today, if you showed up today and had flowers, what's she going to say? "What did you do?" You know, because we're out of the practice. And if she scooted over next to you while you were driving, you'd wreck. You know, because we've gotten out of practice of doing things. Listen, you know, I had a business law class, bait and switch. You remember that concept? You bait somebody with something, and then they get to the store and they don't have any. But we have some of this. You know, bait and switch. Listen, if you're going to win your wife or your husband with certain things, and then when you get them, you just quit and say, "Well, this is the real thing you get." That's not fair. We need to treat each other and keep courtship alive. Ephesians 5 and verse 29 says that we need to nourish our relationships. If you take a plant home, no matter how good that plant looks, and you set it over there in the corner, and you just let it die, and you never feed or water it, it'll die. And if you have a relationship and you don't feed and water that relationship, it too is going to die. And I'll tell you, one of the major reasons in my experience is I've talked to people who get themselves in situations, you know, I love my husband, I never thought I'd do this, but here I am, I'm seeing somebody else. Or I love my wife and never planned on doing it just happened. You know how things happen like that? Because the one that's supposed to be saying how good a person looks or how nice they are and how pleasant they are to be around and how thankful they are to have them in their life, and all those things. The people that are supposed to be saying those things aren't saying them, but somebody at work is, and somebody else is getting the attention. You want to set up a couple for an affair? You let the husband say nothing complimentary to his wife and let somebody at work do it. That's how those things happen. God knows that, and he told us to nourish the relationships that we have. Also, our homes need to practice forgiveness. We have to have forgiveness in our homes. Listen, you can't get two people to live together in the same house and not run over top of each other. It's bound to happen. And you don't even have to be trying. It can be happening in ways that, you know, I wasn't trying to make you mad. I just did. And if you can't, I tell people, and when I counsel young people, I tell them this up front. If you're not mature enough to forgive, you don't need to be married. It takes a mature person to forgive. Because one who forgives is one who is wronged, and he misses out on vengeance and all those things. He has to be the big person, the mature person, to say, rightfully, but I'm going to give up my rights. And if you're not big enough to do that, you don't need to be married. Because forgiveness is a requisite for marriage, because we're going to walk on top of each other. Ephesians 4 and verse 32 says, be kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake forgave us. We need to learn to forgive. And if we can't do that, we certainly don't need to be in a marriage. Failing to forgive, I was counseling a family one time, and there was a young man and his wife, and his mother-in-law and father-in-law were all in this room. And the mother started yelling at her daughter. And while they're yelling at each other, the father-in-law starts yelling at his son-in-law, and they're yelling at each other. Literally, there is screaming between four individuals taking place. And I got up from the table that we were at, and I had a little conference room off from my office, and I left the room, and I went in, and I've got a ball of fishing line about this big. I just took it one day and reeled it off and knotted it up, and I've got this ball of mess about that big. And I walked back in that room with that fishing line. I don't even think they knew I was gone. They were just going at each other. And I tossed that down on the table, and they stopped. And I said, would you all undo that for me? You know, the father-in-law was persistent enough. He said, well, give it here. And he was going to try. There's no way. And he did for a little bit, maybe a minute. And he said, I can't get it. There's no way. And I said, no, you'll never get this untangled. And I said, part of the problem you guys are having is you're saying things, and you're not deliberately lying. You just see the events differently, and you don't even remember them the same. Too much time has passed, and what he says is not what you remember, and you'll never resolve this. If this was my fishing line and I wanted to go fishing, I'd have to cut the line and start all over. And I told them, if you're ever going to get your relationship resolved among yourselves, you're going to have to cut the line and forgive each other and move on from this day forward. Because some things you're never going to sort out. Not because you don't want to, but because you don't even remember it the same way. You don't have your facts right. I grew up in West Virginia. My grandparents were farmers all their life. And, they had a slop bucket. You know what a slop bucket is? It was before garbage disposals. You had this little canister you kept in your kitchen, and when you got finished, you'd scrape off everything in that bucket. And my grandma's, I remember, had a lid because it needed it. It was pretty bad. But you know what we do sometimes? We get in fusses with each other, husband and wives. and we get after each other. And when I see she's got the upper hand on me and she's winning in this fight, you know what I do? I grab some remnants from a fight from the past that'll help bolster my case. And I take the lid off and I just throw it out there on the table and say, nah, take that. You know, we're even now. And all I've done is make a big mess. Don't we do that sometimes? We get in fusses with each other, and if you're winning and I don't want to lose, I'm gonna throw something. Well, last week that's part of the problem. We won't let go. Forgiveness, we can't play at forgiveness. It's not something that's conditional. I'll forgive if you do this, this, and this. And you know, it's not partial. I'll forgive until you do this again. It needs to be absolute. We need to just bury the past and move on, never to bring those things up again. Like I said, I know that's hard. And that's why people don't need to get married unless they know how to forgive, unless they're mature enough to forgive. But we need to practice forgiveness. And along that line, too, let me say this. What makes it easier to forgive is when we react in proper ways. You ever have a conflict that you win with your wife? What do you say? Told you. You know, we have to throw those things in, which makes people kind of bristle up to the idea of saying, you were right and I was wrong. We need to get beyond that. You know, we get stubborn. We'll go down the road, and my wife will say, here, you need to turn right here. And I said, no, it's the next exit down. No, you need to turn right here. No, I'm going on. And I go on down, and guess what? She was right. And so you know what I do? I say, well, I knew it was back there. I wanted to come up here and see that property over there. And we're going back, you know. We can't admit I was wrong, because usually somebody's there to say, told ya. What if when we were right, we said nothing, and when we're wrong, we say we're sorry? You know how much that would solve? And just leave it at that. Let me give you one more point, and that'll be the last one. And, well, healthy homes, the kind of homes we need to have, are homes that put God first. It doesn't matter if you're in a preacher's home or anybody's home. That's fundamental. God created marriage. He knows best how it ought to operate. You follow His rules and you'll find fulfillment. I mean, there's owner's manuals, aren't there? And the guy who makes the thing and writes the owner's manual, he pretty much knows what you're supposed to do with that and how to care for it. If you'd listen to what he says, you'd be minus a whole lot of trouble. And if we just listen to what God says, we would avoid a whole lot of trouble. God needs to be a part of our home. In 2 Samuel chapter 6, there was an occasion when the Ark of the Covenant was placed in the house of Obed-Edom. You remember that? And that Ark of the Covenant rested there for 6 months. It was when David tried to move the cart in an unauthorized way, and he kind of pouted because God wouldn't put up with it and tolerate it, and went back home and left the Ark here in this man's house. Can you imagine having the Ark of the Covenant in your living room? Can you imagine the presence of God literally in your house? How would that change things for you? Well, I think it'd make a big change. I think I'd be more careful if God literally, what if Jesus literally needed to stay in your house for a couple months? Would that change anything in how you do business? Would you speak more politely to your wife, to your husband? Would you say prayers before your meals? Would you turn the channel, or maybe turn it off completely? Now, I know a guy who has a TV in his house, sits in the corner, it's backwards. And so when you go to his house, you having trouble with your TV, been working on it? No. Well, why is it turned around backwards? And he says, well, if my kids talked and acted the way that TV does, I'd make them stand in the corner. So, you know, I stand it in the corner. Well, maybe that's an extreme, but it does make it. Our homes ought to be a safe haven from the world. We ought not invite it in. And if Jesus lived in your home, would you watch some of the things that you watch? Point is, you know he does, right? No, we don't have the Ark of the Covenant living in our home, and we don't have Jesus sitting in our recliner chair, but he's there, and he sees and he knows. We need to conduct ourselves in our home in a way that God would be pleased and would see fit. And guys, listen, there are so many ways, and I'm going to talk about this tomorrow. There's so many ways to show God to our children. We don't have to sit down and say at 8 o'clock every night we're going to have this devotional period. Because if your schedule's like mine, we can't ever do it. We can't get that consistent because things come up, things happen. But there are ways you can impart a knowledge of God in your children without that structure of 8 to 8:15 or 8 to 8:30. We're going to do this. Everyday opportunities. Our children need to know that our homes are not a good place to grow up, but a God place where they grow up. God needs to permeate our homes. So anyway, I hope that's been practical and helpful to you. And let me close by just simply saying this. You know, sometimes I hear people and I see titles, 7 Secrets to a Happy Home. There's no secret to it. It's all been revealed. God has made, read Ephesians chapter 5. In one chapter, God says more than a bookstore can hold on all of its shelves about relationships. He tells men how to love their wives, and he tells wives how to respect their husbands. And if we'll do that, it's no secret. It's been revealed. We'll have the happy home that we should have. I hope you can come back tomorrow. We're going to be talking about parenting and children and some practical things there. And then again on Wednesday, some points in particular to preachers and their families as that relates to the church. I appreciate your attention.